Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Sexual insecurity and humor and lust and, songs about persevering in long-term relationships.
All right, Patrick, we got through one Suburbs Fest this year, but do the listeners who feel like maybe they missed out on something, well, here's your second chance. There's going to be another Suburbs Fest this year. It'll be our annual fest in the Washington, D.C. area. End of September, that's, I guess, this month, September 28th through 30th. That's a Thursday through Saturday, three nights of quality entertainment brought to you by this podcast, Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And to help us out with Suburbs Fest this year, man, we got a really good band lined up
for the
opening night, Thursday night. It's the Airport 77s, and with us today from that band is Andy Sullivan. Hello, Andy.
Hey, Jim. Hey, Patrick. How you doing?
Good. Thanks for coming on, Andy. Appreciate it.
You're very cheery for a morning interview.
I got two cups of coffee in me, and I'm ready to go.
Andy, tell us about the Airport 77s. I mentioned Power Pop.
Yes.
I think that's pretty evident to anybody who listens to your stuff. It's very tight, hooky. How did this band come together? And give us a little bit about, your interest in this type of music.
Yeah. So the drummer, John Kelly, is a Power Pop fanatic, has always been. His favorite record is Get the Knack. And he and our original bass player, Chuck Dolan, wanted to get a band together to do sort of obscure covers, not just My Sharona, but, songs by the Paul Collins Beat and 2020 and acts like that. And they had seen me play around town, and so they recruited me. And I had never been in a trio before. It was a little intimidating when you're the only guitarist and one of two singers. You've got a lot of ground to cover. But we started playing, and we sort of hit it off immediately. And so we played for many years just purely as a covers act around town. It was very casual. We'd play two or three times a year. We developed a pretty lengthy set list. And we found, whenever we'd play, people would really respond. We could be at a club. We could be at a neighborhood street festival. In a parade or whatever, there's something about that sound, harmonies, crunchy guitars, up-tempo, sort of Ramones meets Cheap Trick kind of thing. And then the pandemic came along, and we started writing original material sort of to fit in that template. And we made our first record, came out in January of 2021, when everything was still really locked down. And that was frustrating at first because we couldn't play any live shows. We couldn't see people. But it was heartening to put that out and get the response we got.
Okay.
So that's the first, that's chapter one. And since then, that got enough notice, on the internet that sort of one of the foremost labels of power pop, we got in touch with them and we agreed to do records with them. That's Gem Records. They're in New Jersey. And so they released our second record, which is called We Realize You Have a Choice. And that came out a year ago. And so we now have two records and we're starting to develop material for a third.
Andy, can you talk a little bit about that Gem Records connection? Because I find it so fascinating. I know when I was growing up and buying records, when you saw the Gem sticker, it was like, wow, this is a cool import or something really interesting. In the little one corner of the record store, it was always really, really cool and eclectic. But I'd love to hear a little more on how you guys got connected with them, because I think it makes so much sense.
Yeah, it's an interesting story. It was started by Marty Scott and another guy who I think he traveled to England and he saw a record by The Who for sale over there that was not available here. So he filled up his suitcase with those records, brought them back and sold them on college campuses and realized, hey, there's a real opportunity here. There's great records that are released overseas that American listeners would like. And so they were the first people to release, The Cure in the United States. A lot of acts like that. Their biggest coup was they put out Cheap Trick live at Budokan because their American record label didn't want to release it. These guys heard it and said, wow, that's amazing. And so that was obviously, you know, a huge, huge record in the 1970s. And then I think they got bought by Sire Records, and then I think it all fell apart in the 80s.
Right.
And Marty revived the label maybe 10 or 15 years ago. And so he does a combination of re-releases and then a lot of acts like us that sort of have that sound. One of my favorites on the label is the Midnight Callers. They just released a record in June. It's very, very good. I'd recommend it to people. Another band, the Anderson Council, also had a record out this year that has one of my all-time favorite songs I've heard this year, Wanna Be Alone With You. So there's some great acts on the label, and we're a nice fit. We do these annual tribute records. There's one that just came out in August that's a tribute to the songs of the Kinks. So we do Picture Book. Last year, there's one on The Who, and we did a mashup of Won't Get Fooled Again and Substitute.
I'd listened to that. Where did that idea come from?
I had gotten a new pedal that could make my guitar sound like that synthesizer that goes throughout Won't Get Fooled Again.
Oh, wow.
That sort of sample and hold LFO thing. Wah, 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 wah. And then we like Substitute, so we thought we'd mash them up, and then in the middle it sort of turns into Come Sail Away by Styx. So it's totally over the top.
Fantastic, fantastic. So let's talk a little bit about your love of power pop. You mentioned your drummer kind of got this band started, right?
Yep.
But for you personally, does this love go way back?
You know, the first music, I'm sure like all of our listeners, you know, you can remember that moment when music sort of first clicked for you. And as a kid, I played a lot of classical. I sang in classical choirs and listened to a lot of folk music. And I didn't start listening to rock and pop music until I was about 10 years old. And that's when, you know, My Sharona was big. That's when, you know, the Cars' first and second records were out and circulating. And so, you know, over the years, as I learned to play music and played in a whole bunch of bands, that sort of always stuck with me, even as I pursued, you know, different genres and different styles. So it sort of felt like a homecoming when he got this band back together about 10 years ago or so. It just felt like, you know, this suits my skills and my interests. And another big thing, I guess, was realizing that in the 21st century, past is present, you know, the notion of progress is sort of meaningless. Things sort of fold back on themselves. And you can't, you know, I have lost track of trying to figure out what sort of retro revival we're in right now. You know, remember, like, in the 1990s, everybody's excited about the 1970s. And, you know, I guess it started with Happy Days in the 1970s being nostalgic for the 1950s. And I think that's gone. You know, like, my 14-year-old daughter has a David Bowie T-shirt, but she also really likes Lana Del Rey. You know, there's... And so for us to sort of use this power pop template as, you know, a base, I think doesn't necessarily consign us to irrelevancy. You know, we're doing our thing. It sounds like this, but certainly, you know, we try to write good songs and do the best we can and try to make it relevant to today.
All right. Well, that's a good answer. I was going to ask if you ever feel like you're sort of a band out of time, but it sounds to me like you think the music you're playing is kind of timeless in a way.
Yeah. Another big inspiration was X Hex, a local Washington, D.C. mm-hmm. band. When their record came out, they drew on that inspiration as well, but they sounded modern and current and really cool. And so I listened to them and I thought, wow, okay, that can work.
Now, I do have to ask you this, though. Is your core audience guys like us?
Yeah, I found there is a gap in that when we play out, you tend not to have too many young parents in their 30s, you know, because they just can't get out of the house. You know, right. your life goes like when you're in your teens and 20s, you are out of the house all the time. Then as you get older, you know, it gets harder to do that for logistical reasons. So I found our audience is either people who haven't had kids yet or people who are, you know, around 50s and older who can get out of the house.
Yes, we understand that dynamic.
Yeah.
You know, Andy, talking about sort of time and eras overlapping, I find it very interesting that the bass player that's currently in the band, Cal Everett,
right,
was in a, and Jim didn't grow up around here, but when I was growing up around here, there was a band well known called 4 Out of 5 Doctors that were a big, you know, they were always on our DC 101 station and they put out 2 major label records. They were touring with really big bands, but they were a very cool power pop band. And if you go back and listen to them, I mean, if people like some of the groups that Andy's been mentioning as inspiration, 4 Out of 5 Doctors are like a cool, you know, band that came from DC that had some really, really cool songs. But I think it's so fascinating that Cal is now in the group with you, even though you made the 2 records with Chuck Dolan, but Cal is the bass player now. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, if Wynton Marsalis got Louis Armstrong in his band, you know, we're going back, and it was a real personnel coup for us to get Cal. So our original bass player, Chuck Dolan, put in his notice last November. He said, it's enough for me. This is sort of getting to be too much of a time suck. And mm-hmm. that was a real blow because Chuck's a great guy and an awesome musician. And the band had formed in large part around his capabilities as a bass player and singer. And so, you know, it took us a while to find the right replacement because we needed somebody who could sing like a monster and, you know, play like a beast. And several people recommended Cal and we reached out to him, and I mean, it's amazing. I just had a practice with him and me last night, and he's such a just monster musician. He can sing like Paul McCartney and just is a real wonderful melodic creative bass player and a songwriter too. So we're going to work up some of those old 4 Out of 5 Doctors songs. And
oh, are you? Cool.
Yeah. We're doing a show at the Hamilton in D.C. In October 7th, I think it is. It's called A Tribute to the Cellar Door, the old nightclub in Georgetown where everybody used to play. And one of the acts that used to play there was 4 Out of 5 Doctors. Yeah. So we're going to play a 4 Out of 5 Doctors song.
Oh, that's going to be fantastic.
Yeah.
I got to go to that.
And this is also the first band I've been in where I'm working with another singer who can sing as high as I can. Like we're both tenors. So, you know, it's a real treat to be like, you want to take the high harmony? How about you take it?
That's very cool.
Yeah. Usually I'm the guy who's sort of hanging out up there on the G's and A's.
Very neat. And, you know, kind of to that point, I'm very interested in the songwriting process because I feel like your records are so sharp and precise, yet have the spirit. You haven't sort of polished them or worked on them to the point where you've lost the propulsion and the spirit behind the songs, yet they're very well put together. Do you bring things in finished or do others bring things in finished? How does that creative process work?
I have been the main songwriter on these first 2 records. John contributed 1 song, I'll Turn Up Over Tina, on the last record. And I, you know, sometimes they're finished, often they're not. Often I'll present something that's 80% of the way there. And John and I are both journalists, so we're very open to editing and cutting and pasting. So often things will move around, you know, ditch this verse, change this lyric. That lyric is a little problematic. And what if we, you know, scoot up the chorus? So that's generally how it comes together. And in terms of that sense of, I mean, I guess you're saying it doesn't sound too polished. And often when I write, I try to leave gaps in the lyrics to sort of create a little sense of things being off kilter. You know, you want to tell a story, but you don't want to fill in every single little gap in that story. Yes. You know, it's sort of the Tom Petty approach as opposed to the Bruce Springsteen approach.
Interesting.
You listen to Springsteen and it's like, here is this exact picture of this greaser guy in New Jersey in his hot rod.
And drinking Petty, warm beer. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And Petty's like free falling, and then anybody can sort of listen to that and slot in their own life experiences. And so I try to sort of steer a middle ground there. You know, you want a lyric that like paints a real specific picture, but then wait, what the heck is happening in the second verse? You know. Now we're alone together.
Find, you know, the type of music that you're working in tends to, you know, tends toward these, you know, these sort of love songs, right? Do you find that you have to sort of channel the younger you in some way?
I don't think so. I mean, it's love and romance is such a all-encompassing topic, and you know, it's something that you're always wrestling with, whether or not you're writing from direct experience or not. You know, it's, I think there's a lot going on. And I think if you listen to some of our songs, there's, you know, sexual insecurity and humor and lust and, you know, songs about persevering in long-term relationships, sort of cover the gamut.
Okay.
Yeah. Like I point out, from our first record, there's a song called When You're Kissing on Me, Do You Think of James McAvoy? And it's this guy who's so like insecure that his girlfriend has a crush on a movie star. And he sort of goes to these absurd lengths like, you know, oh, if you go out on a date with him, would you just drink the kind of wine that he drank because he's James McAvoy? When he told you that his favorite band was Coldplay, would you agree? Because they're terrible. You know, and so that's getting at a few things. One is, you know, sexual insecurity, and then it's funny. And but then it's also like it also, I would like to think, touches on the challenges of being present in a relationship, you know, when you're involved with somebody. Are you there? Are you looking them in the eyes while you're eating dinner? Or are you thinking about James McAvoy?
That's a fantastic song. And I will say I played it on my internet radio show, I Rock in the Suburbs Radio. And although we don't have thousands of listeners, I did get immediate responses from people that were listening. We're like, what was that? Which was great.
Yeah.
Do you, one more thing about songwriting. Do you, you mentioned that you're a journalist. Mm-hmm. Do you use songwriting as kind of an escape from that? Because you don't really deal with like topical types of themes in your music.
Right. That's a good question. I mean, I think, yeah, in that sense that like, no matter what you do, you don't want all your eggs to be wrapped up in one basket. You know, you don't want to be somebody who like, you know, if you have a job, that's the only thing you think about all the time, you know? And so, yeah, I think it's enriching to have other things to pursue. I will point out, maybe about 10 or 15 years ago, I made a record with another band called Dirty Bomb, and it was a rock opera about the disgraced lobbyist Jack Abramoff. And I was a reporter who'd covered that, and is covering it, you know, I thought like, wow, there's, you know, some interesting creative possibilities here. And I spent a lot of time in that story and I was like, do I want to write a book about it? No, that would be boring. But maybe I could make a concept album about, you know, an ambitious person who then, you know, falls into corruption and et cetera, et cetera.
Wow.
So there's another way to sort of wrestle with that topic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you got that out of your system.
Yeah. Yeah. I found out the world is not really begging for songs about the Defense Appropriations Subcommittee.
And was that a solo album that you did, Andy, or what was that exactly?
It was called Dirty Bomb, and you know, you can find it on the streaming platforms. Okay. The record is called King of the Hill, and it was made with other musicians here in town, notably drummer Matt Tebow, who plays a lot of jazz and is just a monster. And I'm getting another project going with him right now. He's just a great guy to play with.
Tell me where you want to go to. Tell me who you want to be. Wonder how you're going to get there. No, that ticket don't come free. We got friends, we got friends, and they got friends. We got influence to share. We can open up the door. We can get you in the room. We got friends, and they got friends. We know everyone in town. We got influence, and we can use that influence for you. Treasure locked up in a castle. You don't want to be by yourself. You need someone knows the password. I think we might be able to help.
We got friends.
We got friends. They got friends. We got influence to spare. We can open up the door. We can get you in the room.
We got friends.
They got friends. We know everyone in town. We got
talk a little bit about your live show, Andy. It's very entertaining, and I have seen you guys play once, and Jim, it was on a golf course, which was very cool. It wasn't like on a green, but it was sort of around the clubhouse area of the golf course, and I thought that was so cool. It was about, you know, a little before sundown. It was quite an interesting environment.
Those are fantastic shows. It's Sligo Creek Golf Course in Silver Spring, Maryland, our hometown, and it sounds a little corny, but yeah, it's a wonderful setting, and they grill burgers and sell beers, and there's usually hundreds of people out, you know, little kids dancing, people throwing frisbees, and it's a nice chance for our audience, the sort of young parents that we mentioned earlier, to come out and see us. So often we'll go there and I'll see like lots of people I know from my kid's soccer team, you know, but that's been a fantastic environment. I would say in general, our live show, we really approach it like we have an obligation to grab the audience by the throat and give them a good show.
Yep.
And so that means, you know, looking them in the eye when you sing. That means memorizing your lyrics so you're not reading an iPad. That means, for me, jumping up and down a whole lot. I feel like I don't have a good show unless I push myself to the point of exhaustion. You know, if I'm not covered in sweat and just totally dead by the end of the show, whether it's 20 minutes or it's 3 hours, then I haven't done it right.
You literally look like an airline pilot who's just gone through a harrowing flight to land his plane.
Okay, so that brings me to my next question. How did you come up with the name Airport 77s? I mean, I know it's the name of a movie.
Yes.
Although it's like a sequel.
Right.
Disaster movie, right?
Right.
So,
yeah.
So why'd you land on that name?
There was a whole series of airport movies in the 70s. They put them out one year after another. And at this point, as you recall, disaster movies were like superhero movies are today. It was the franchise. Yep. You know, you had the Towering Inferno. You had the Poseidon Adventure. You know, like, put people in a vessel of some sort and then set it on fire, and there's your movie.
Every summer and Christmas, there'd be a new one coming
out. Yes, exactly. And so we were kicking around names, and we thought of the Towering Infernos, and somebody suggested, what about the Airport 77s? And it's just random enough that, you know, it was interesting, and then, you know, some people would get the joke, and other people maybe wouldn't. But yeah, the movie's on YouTube. You can watch it. It's not very good.
You kind of had to be there for the airport movie.
It is
movie.
Funny. I mean, it's funny. But does it also sort of tag your music in a way to have 77 in there? Do you know what I mean?
Perhaps in that is the year. But, you know, again, we started as a cover band playing a lot of music from that era. So, you know, that didn't bother us. And now it's too late to change it. You know, the brand has so much equity, we really wouldn't want
to. That's right, of course.
Our investors won't let us.
How do you feel about the state of air travel today?
Personally, we flew to Calgary and Seattle this summer on vacations, and it was just fine. So I salute America's airlines and air traffic control workers and pilots and flight attendants. I know it's a very difficult job, very grueling. I know they've all been through some real rough years and dealt with some real nightmarish passengers. So, no, I say good job, everybody. Keep it up.
All right.
Andy, talk a little bit about the graphics on your album covers. I love them because they're simple, yet very clever, and they don't look like, you know, somebody put it together in 5 minutes on Photoshop. Like, they really have balance, and, you know, it's very intriguing, yet the elements are very simple. Is that something you put together, or how was that put together?
The first record, I wanted, you know, it's a very straightforward, immediate record. We went down to Inner Ear in Arlington and banged it out in like 2 days. And so we wanted an album cover that captured that intensity. And so I thought of, you know, I forget the name of the photographer, the guy who did all those shots for all those early Seattle sub pop grunge records. You know, they all had a look. Yeah. And
Charles,
it was like
Charles Peterson or whoever that was.
That might be it. Yeah. So yeah. Swirling, lots of hair, lots of, you know, motion. And so my friend Chip Soma de Villa is a news photographer for Getty, and he had shot some of our shows, and he had gotten a few of those shots that had that same effect. It's sort of blurry and swirly and in motion. And yeah, so we used one of those where you couldn't see any of our faces. You just saw like guitars and airline outfits. And so it was really sort of a tribute to like that first Mudhoney record, Superfuzz Big Mud, you know. And so it was very sort of basic and straightforward. And the next one, we had that great logo and we wanted to incorporate it. We've been working with a very good graphic designer. So that was sort of a case of fooling around with Photoshop and coming up with what looks best. But I'm glad it doesn't look that way.
No, it doesn't, actually, to me. I love the whole layout of it. Yeah, it's fantastic.
Thank you.
All right, so Thursday, September 28th.
Correct.
At The Runaway. It's doors at 9. I I think the music might start at 9:30. It's late, so everybody, you know, take a nap that day.
That's right.
Get ready for this, because you're going to get three bands playing into the late hours.
But you should come early, because they have a great beer list and the best burgers in the DMV.
Do they really? Fantastic.
Yeah, amazing burgers.
Oh, cool. And you guys will be playing several shows this fall. So if those are in the DMV area, there's going to be more than one opportunity. Once you fall in love with the Airport 77s at Rockin' the Suburbs Fest, you can see them other places.
Yeah, we're at the Hamilton for the Cellador show, where we'll be playing a 4 out of 5 Doctor song. That's October 7th. November 3rd, we're at Solace Outpost, which is a brewery in Fairfax, right near you, Patrick. Is that right?
Yeah, right down the street.
All right.
Falls Church, right?
Falls Church.
Falls Church.
Yeah.
Yeah. November 4th, we're at Hank Deedle's, which is an awesome little roadhouse in Rockville. Let's see. December 1st, we're at the Hubcap Center in D.C., which is a great little community space.
That's busy.
Yeah.
Fantastic. All right.
And
everybody,
we
come
should
on
mention,
out.
Too, that our second night is going to be at Hank Deedle's Tavern.
Oh, cool.
That's right.
With Frank Muffin and the Half Smokes.
Oh, great. That is a good lineup and a great little venue.
Yeah.
You guys are
going to
enjoy
it.
Should
be fun.
It's tremendous. You can find all the details on Suburbs Fest by going to suburbspod.com/fest. You see all three nights of entertainment there. And Andy, of course, I'd love for you, if you can, to stop by the Saturday night at Hell's Bottom in Tacoma Park.
Oh, you're at Hell's Bottom this year? Oh, that's great. That's another wonderful venue. Yeah.
Saturday's going to be an open mic and live band karaoke. So if you can come by that. We'd love
if you
want to
work
you.
Up the entire Dirty Bomb opera, you can just play it for us while you're there.
That would be the worst open mic ever. wow, that sounds like fun.
Yeah, so stop by. All right, okay. So anyway, it's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to have people coming from not only the local area, but also from out of state.
Mm-hmm.
People coming to see these shows, and it's going to be a great time. And since Andy mentioned the great beer list at the Runway, of course, everyone can feel free to buy me a beer.
That's right. Yeah. Yes, and the Airport 77s.
Yeah,
yes, absolutely.
Can I add one more thing before we wrap up?
And yeah,
that
sure.
is, I really, really like what you guys are doing. It's an awesome show, and it's a great sort of community building exercise you guys are doing as well. I've been to past Suburbs Fests here in D.C., and it's like great crowd, people coming from all over, fun bands. So I really appreciate what you're doing. Keep up the great work.
Thank you very much. That means a lot.
Thanks. And it's great to connect with people like you as well. So
absolutely.
That's what this is all about. All right. I guess let's get out of here. Thanks very much, Andy Sullivan.
Thanks, Andy.
You know what? One more thing we should say. Where can people hear the Airport 77s besides these live shows you mentioned? How can they get your music?
Website. You can sign up for a mailing list there, airport77s.com. And we're on all the usual digital platforms. The best one, of course, is Bandcamp, where you can buy physical products as well as digital downloads. But Bandcamp is so good. The artists actually get paid, unlike the other streaming platforms, which are awful in terms of paying you. So Bandcamp is wonderful.
There you go.
Amen.
So do that. All right. Thanks very much. It's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And with us has been...
Andy Sullivan from the Airport 77s.
Yay!
Thank you, sir.
All right. We'll talk to you all later.
When you're kissing on me, do you think of James McAvoy? McAvoy, I mean, I get it. He's really dreamy. Sitting situations I'd even call him steamy. When you're kissing on me, do you think of James McAvoy? McAvoy, I mean, I get it. It rings your bell, but I wanna be the one to make your heart swell. I mean, I get it, super great. But do you think he's slack on a date? If he ordered the Chardonnay, would you order the Chardonnay? You never like Chardonnay, it's way too buttery.
Wingtip Slope plays once a year, whether you want to hear them or not.